And this is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. How much information should you have before you go to vote? If you don't have command of the basic facts about the candidates and issues, should you be prevented from voting? Are you a low-information voter? Does one political party have more low-information voters than the other? Where do you get all your information before you go voting? Would you investigate the candidates and issues, or do you just rely on your gut instincts? So are voters less informed than they were 50, 20, 10 years ago? These are all the questions that we want to ask today when we're talking about low-information voters. What is that term? What does it mean? We invite you to join our conversation. Give us a call at 614-8980. What does low-information voter mean to you? You could also email your questions and comments to The Source at tpr.org. You can also go to the comments section on our website at tpr.org. Our guest this half hour, Dr. David Crockett. He is a professor of political science at Trinity University. He is the author of books such as Running Against the Grain, How Opposition Candidates Win Presidential Elections. Also, we have Eric Bollert. He is the senior fellow at Media Matters, which is a progressive research and information center dedicated to monitoring, analyzing, correcting conservative information that's in the media. Welcome, everyone, to The Source.
Good to be here.
Hi.
Eric, so let me ask you, Media Matters, have you noticed people using the term low information voter, and what do you think that term means?
Well, as you say, we monitor the conservative media most often, and we certainly hear it a lot, and it's basically become Rush Limbaugh's insult for a liberal. Barack Obama won the election because of all those low information voters. Democrats are successful because of low information voters. So the claim from the right, and it's really just been in the last year or two that Limbaugh has sort of grabbed onto it. And frankly, I think it's a way to explain lots of Republican losses. So if you can't win at the polls, you take a step back and say, why aren't we winning? Oh, the voters don't get it. The voters are too dumb, or the voters don't understand. So Limbaugh, who ironically sort of makes a living with passing misinformation, has decided that the reason Obama won two electoral landslides was because voters just didn't really understand what was going on. And if they could just, take a couple steps back and understand what he's doing to health care and things like that, no one would vote for Obama and no one would vote for Democrats. So the way we most often hear that phrase is basically it's an insult to explain how Democrats win elections.
So Rush Limbaugh is a conservative radio commentator, and he's a master at crafting liberal arguments in favor of their point of view. And so he's using this as a code. What does it mean? What does low information voter actually mean? Is it a particular person, demographic?
It just means anyone who in his views. It's anyone who's too dumb to vote for a Democrat, anyone who doesn't really understand what's going on in America.
Anyone who's too dumb to vote for a Republican, you mean?
I'm sorry, yes. Or is so dumb they vote for a Democrat. Anyone who lived through Barack Obama's first term and can't understand that he's a socialist and he wants high unemployment and he may have not been born in the United States and things like that. So anyone who didn't buy into a lot of the excited attacks on Obama in the first administration, anyone who lived through that and then voted for him again, Limbaugh would consider that a low-information voter.
Now, David Crockett, professor of Trinity University, low-information voter, is this a new term?
Well, it's been popularized in the last few months by Rush Limbaugh. The term itself, probably fairly new, but the idea is not. Something very close to that term was originally published by a guy named Samuel Popkins, political scientist back in the 80s and 90s, wrote a book about the reasoning voter and talked about low-information voters back then. So there's a long history of trying to figure out what voters know and wrestle with the question of how little they seem to know.
But when it was coined by Samuel Popkins and in his book, he was looking not at, at one political side or the other, or what was the intention, original intent? I mean, because there are people who have made this argument from both sides, not just the right towards the left, but the left also saying that the people who vote Republican may be low information voters because sometimes they're voting against, you know, to cut social programs that they even themselves may depend on.
Right. Oftentimes, this would be a type of term or a concept that's used by whichever side happens to lose the election. So back in the early part of the of this last decade, you had people just expressing amazement that anyone would vote for George W. Bush. And so I forget the author, but someone wrote a famous book, What's the Matter with Kansas? And the basic idea is that how could anyone in Kansas vote for conservative economic policies seemingly in contradiction to their own self-interest? So I think it's something that's not unusual. A lot of people who are very partisan can't imagine voting for the other side, and therefore you have to have an explanation for why people would do that. But political scientists have known since the 50s that strange things happen in voters' minds in terms of how much they know in the polls, and it's, you know, either scary or natural. But we've known for 60 years now that voters don't typically know nearly as much as the civically virtuous ideal voter ought to know.
Right. And what is that? How much, what is the optimum amount of knowledge that a person needs to have to go vote? Is you know, has this become a something that's been brought up also? Media Matters, you know, Eric Bollert, are they saying that because we have low information voters, that there should be some way of preventing them from going to go vote? That's why we need things like voter ID?
Well, that's a good question. I think there probably is a not so subtle attempt to tie low information voters with the an effort to restrict voting, which we've seen in recent years, particularly from Republicans, you know, getting rid of early voting. There was states where you maybe had to bring an ID to Pennsylvania, wanted to have people show up with an ID. I don't know if it's been explicit about these are the people that with low information voters, therefore we don't want them to vote. I think it's basically if these are groups of people who don't vote for us, how do we not get them to vote as often or as many of them? But I think what's interesting with the low information voter is we do see sort of troubling signs in terms of a lack of general knowledge while we're having this sort of this information eruption and information explosion with the internet and almost a limitless number of places to get news. But anyone who has watched, you know, jaywalking on Jay Leno on The Tonight Show, and he asks very simple questions to people, showing them, you know, I think he's probably shown them pictures of Barack Obama and people not knowing, and you sort of fall off your couch.
Right. So we're going to talk more about that in just a moment. We're going to take a break. We need to get voters and callers in on the conversation. The number is 614-8980. Tell us what you think about people being low information voters. This is The Source on KSTX. We will be right back.
Our country. And this election will be determined by the undecided voter.
It seems that more than 96% of voters have already made up their minds about this election. Well, I guess some of us are just a little bit harder to please. We're not impressed by political spin or 30-second sound bites. Before you get our vote, you're going to have to answer some questions. Questions like,
when is the election? How soon do you have to decide?
What are the names of the two people running? And be specific.
Who is the president right now? Is he or she running? Because if so, experience is maybe something we should consider.
How long is a president's term of office? 1 year? 2 years? 3 years? Or life?
If it's for life, frankly, we're not comfortable with that. We don't need to be electing a dictator.
What happens if the president dies? Has anyone thought about who would replace him? What's your plan, gentlemen?
Can women vote? Because if not, as a woman, I've got a big problem with that. And by the way, if men can't vote, in my opinion, that's just as wrong.
We hear a lot about our dependence on foreign oil, but
just what is oil? What is it used for?
Can a woman have a baby just from French kissing?
We are America's undecided voters. There's still a lot we don't know.
And we want answers.
Low Information Voters of America is responsible for the content of this advertising.
That's a clip from Saturday Night Live, and this is The Source on KSTX, and we're talking about low information voters, and we want you to call up, tell us what you think about folks who go vote. Maybe they don't have enough information. Should they be prevented from voting, or should they be trusted? The democratic process is the foundation of, is it, you know, people going to go vote not knowing what's going on? Give us a call, 614-8980. Helping me with this conversation, I've got Dr. David Crockett, professor of political science at Trinity University, and Eric Bollert, a senior fellow at Media Matters. And so let me ask you, Eric Bollert, Media Matters, when you, the SNL spot, you know, you are looking at the media and what it means and picking it apart. Who are they making fun of?
Well, I think there was this amazing sense of who would possibly be undecided at the end of the election last year, in part because obviously stark contrast and things like that. But it was just the barrage of endless TV spots. I mean, you know, Ohio, I think there were 100. I think it was like 140,000 in a week. The numbers were just astronomical in terms of the amount of money that was being spent on TV advertising. So I think the joke was, how could someone sit through in these swing states and actually be a week before the campaign undecided? And we don't really know in terms of polling. Maybe people, that small fraction that still said they were undecided the week before, maybe, you know, they weren't being honest with pollsters and things like that. But there was a sense of, again, going back to sort of this avalanche of information we have in terms of news, and then last election we had just this avalanche of paid advertising. It really did seem not quite believable that there was even a segment of the population that was still hemming and hawing 2 or 3 days before the election day.
Okay, we're going to go to the phones. Plenty of callers who want to get in on this conversation. Edith has been on hold. Welcome to The Source, Edith.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. And I guess my focus is more locally.
Okay.
First, I want to go on record, say that I vote. I always vote. And it's a privilege. After all, I'm a woman. So I take it seriously, but I'm appalled at many of my acquaintances that don't vote, and I can understand why. They work hard. They, life is tough. Gas is expensive. And why bother voting for somebody that's just going to tell you lies? And I'm talking about certain councilwomen in particular, when you have 6 murders in 6 months in a small community, and denial. It's astonishing, and no wonder people don't want to vote, because they don't want to be lied to and talked down to anymore. They just don't think it's worth their time, their gas money, and their effort. That's my opinion.
All right, Edith, thank you so much for your phone call. And so Edith seems like she's a dedicated voter. She seems to be informed about how things are going on in her area, but she says people just don't have time to go vote. Is that a reason why people don't have time to get informed either, I guess, Dr. Crockett?
Yeah, I think she points to two different things going on there. One is the tremendous information costs in voting. We have so much information now, but it does take time. It usually takes some money. It takes effort. People are busy working a job, 2 jobs, having, you know, spending time with their family. And to expect someone to learn all the issues for all the races, for all the candidates, is perhaps irrational. The second thing she highlighted was the question of trust. We have had a tremendous drop in trust in government since the late 1960s. It continues to go down. And so if people think there's nothing there for them in the political system, if they lack trust at a very fundamental level, then they also may have no reason to pay attention to a process that they're disengaged from.
Okay, back to the phones. Angela's been standing by. Angela, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. My comment is, my question is, why is it assumed that we have no information? I'm thinking of 2 examples in particular. One, I voted for the presidential candidate I voted for, not necessarily because I knew everything about him, but because I felt like I knew a lot of things about the opponent that made me not want that person in office. And then in a previous election, my husband and I knew that we could not influence the presidential election in Texas, that our vote was not going to make a big difference there. So we voted for a third party candidate in the hopes that we would, that candidate would get enough votes to create a third party in the United States. So I'm curious about, is it just assumed that we have low information, or are other things taken into account, other motives?
All right. Angela, that's a good question. Thank you. So let me toss that to Eric Bullard at Media Matters. Is there any way of gauging that our voters today are more informed than they were 20, 30 years ago? Certainly, we have greater access to information.
We do, and I don't know, maybe the professor might have a little more on that, but a couple of interesting points she raised was, she didn't vote. It sounded like she didn't necessarily want to vote for someone. She wanted to vote against someone because of what she had learned. And again, that's the amazing influence that negative campaign advertising. We don't even have to call it campaign advertising anymore. It's all negative campaign advertising and the role that plays in terms of filling information or misinformation.
Well, that kind of brings up the point. Sometimes all you got to do is raise the question, like the swift boating of John Kerry, where there were allegations made or just outright misinformation put out there about his military service. And that's what people ran with.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, again, information comes in so many different ways. It comes from one of the most effective or not effective, but people, I think there was research done during the first election, and one of the ways people who were turned off by Barack Obama, there were viral emails going around with lots of sort of nefarious allegations about his past and things like that.
Like a whisper campaign.
But because it came from an email and it just sort of got forwarded and forwarded around, people were much more inclined to believe it rather than it having the name of a campaign attached to it. So the information isn't just sort of watching local news or reading CNN online. It comes from talking to people in lots of other different ways. The interesting point she raised about not wanting to vote because she felt like her vote didn't really matter in a state like Texas or things like that. And that, to me, is kind of amazing. And I think, at least on the presidential numbers, the number of voters has increased each year, even though, thanks to large part to gerrymandering and things like that, there are very few competitive races when you actually look at the total.
All right. Okay, we're going to go back to the phones here. Ray is on the line. Ray, welcome to The Source.
Yeah, good afternoon. I've got two questions. I have one is some commentary, and the other one is a question.
All right, go for it.
I really believe that a lot of low-information voters, some of them happen to be family members, but the biggest issue I'd say, they don't take the time to read the issues, and they tend to focus in on single issues, especially those in my Catholic community. The other is, I think at the last election, even though the progressives didn't have a big showing in Texas, I think that the fact they were told they couldn't vote, or the voter suppression that was attempted here in Texas, I think that increased a little bit of interest. I think when you tell a sentient voter that you're not going to vote because you have to have a voter ID, I think that had a backlash here in Texas. And I'll wait to listen to the response.
Ray, thank you. I appreciate that. So he brings up a couple of interesting points. Family members may not be as informed as you. I heard there's a new computer program out there that tells you how messed up your family is. It's called Facebook. And so Dr. Crockett, it comes to the quality of the source of information. It's very important where you get your information from. Some people try to discredit sources in order to bolster their own side.
Yeah, and one of the problems here is you have so many sources of information. And so back you know, 40 years ago, you had three major networks, a couple national newspapers, and now it's just all over the place, and it becomes very difficult to discern a good source from a bad source, assuming that's an easy thing to identify. I mean, who's to say that a single-issue voter isn't doing something very intelligent? If abortion is the most salient issue to them, that's just as legitimate a reason to vote a certain way as the economy. So it becomes a bit of a mess out there.
All right. And so still lots of calls. Let's go back to the calls. Jessica is on the line. Welcome to The Source, Jessica. We're short on time.
I just had a quick question on if there's research on the age group that the majority of uninformed are. Being a recent college graduate, I know my first election was based on what my parents' beliefs are, which I have now edited. My sister did the same thing. She just graduated from college, and her first election was, again, along with my parents' beliefs.
Okay, Jessica, thank you for that great question. So, Dr. Crockett, you're a college professor, and you see this all the time, kids waking up and making their own minds up about who they're going to support.
Yeah, we know that first-time voters are oftentimes what political scientists refer to as irrational voters. It doesn't mean that they're basing their vote on something irrational. It just means that it could be based on personality or celebrity or charisma, and it usually takes two or three or four elections to really settle into a way of thinking about these issues that would allow us then to refer you as a rational voter. So certainly many first-time voters are young voters, voters who are voting when they're in college, and
that's
a trickier situation.
Dr. Crockett, thank you for that point, and we're out of time on this issue. Dr. Crockett from Trinity University, political science professor. We had Eric Bullard from Media Matters on the line, and thanks to our callers. We'll be right back after the NPR news and break.